ye coming back in here with doctor junkies. I want to see ye coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello, House Tricks. Welcome to the Three Men Weave the Balls at the EGA podcast. My name is Morris Brosnan. I hope you're enjoying Club Month as much as we are, or certainly as this man is anyway. Mick McCarthy is back.
Hello, Morris. How are you?
Great, yeah. How about you?
Sure, look, I'm enjoying Club Month, as you say yourself. It's,
aren't we all, yeah?
Haven't seen many club games or anything like that, but, you know, it's more the... It's like a festival. Like, you just know you're around it. You just feel that kind of vibe and excitement around the country because it is the one and only club month. So, you know, how could you not be excited? How could you not be swept up in it?
A star of the club month, an underappreciated star of club month, is Mr. Mark Farley. Mark, what's the crack?
Oh, sure, not a lot. I'm up to my eyeballs, and I'm club monthed out. We're only 2 weeks. We're not even 2 weeks in. This must be like what Mardi Gras is like in the US.
It's fatigue.
Just, you know, constant celebrations, parties, madness just up and down the country.
Yeah. If Beale Street hosted GEA Club League games on a Saturday and Sunday, I think that's pretty much what Club Month would be like, yeah.
We've got a big show coming up today. We're going to pick the best TV commentary moments, or our favourite TV commentary moments.
Yeah, our favourite, not the best. Yeah.
Not necessarily the best. We're going to chat to the Niall Murphy.
Stop people giving out before we start. Yeah.
We'll review some club action, and we're going to chat to Niall Murphy of Sligo, something I'm really looking forward to. For those of you who don't remember, Niall kind of has a connection to this podcast in that he wrote in with a far superior league format suggestion than all of what we had, basically. He's also Sligo captain this year. Most people should probably know him from the International Rules Tour to Sydney in 2017. He was involved in that as well. And probably most famously, he was the man who modelled the nicest jersey in the GAA this year, which is the Sligo Intercounty jersey.
It's an exceptional jersey, I have to say.
It's another ranking, but probably not for a podcast, given that we have to describe every jersey. It really falls short on the visual. But
do you remember when we were talking a few weeks ago about the Offaly time wasting when they went and kicked the ball off the tee?
Yeah.
The only thing I could think of through all that clip was how nice that those two jerseys were together, I have to say. The always nice Offaly jersey and the brand spanking new Sligo. A lot of people like the black Sligo jersey as a kind of a unique GAA look.
I loved the black jersey back, and the change to black full time in the mid 2000s.
When the year they nearly beat Armagh, I think it was 2 or 3.
And back around then, it probably looked horrendous now because they're all big and baggy compared to what we have nowadays. But back then, Sligo had, without a doubt, the nicest jersey in the country.
When they had the slight white stripes as well, the Kevin Walsh era, it was kind of tints. They were really nice as well. This one obviously has a lot more white in it, but it's not quite the same. Probably won't ask Niall about that now, mind. But
I don't know. If he's the model man modelling it, he should have plenty of opinion on it.
Or else what's he doing, man?
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of anything else I want to talk about.
Niall, I didn't like your league format, and now I'm telling you that you're a fraud of a model.
It's Sligo.
I don't actually believe that, Niall, sorry.
Sligo are in an interesting scenario. We might ask Niall about this later, in that they've obviously been relegated from the league, but what is victory if you're Sligo, even looking ahead to a championship now, which is probably your secondary priority? You look at last year, had a great opening day win against London, but then got hammered by Galway. And then, you know, give Armagh a real fill of it and lost by 3 points. But 3 games in, your season's over. And then you're looking at it again this year, and they're looking at a really similar route because their opening game is a Connacht semi-final against the winners of London or Galway. So presumably that's Galway, and you're back through the qualifiers and like setting up a humdinger there. But like, they're planning for a championship that is, I mean, probably likely 2 games.
Yeah. I think the Super 8s give you an in there that you can, that especially now if you look at, like, you're hoping to get through the qualifiers and then draw a Munster loser or a Leinster loser that isn't Kildare or Meath, and even then you might give yourself
a chance.
But like, there is a way in there that you can get into the Super 8s through that avenue.
I think the Super 8's definitely, but even just, it depends on the qualifier draw you get. A team like Armagh, you give them a good game, it's probably the best you can hope for. But you get those couple of wins against teams at your level in the qualifiers, if you're lucky enough to draw them, suddenly you're on a run, you're into that sort of latter part of the championship, if not quite the Super 8's, and you give a good account of yourself against. That is a good fill-up for the next year. Yeah. I remember, like, you know, before, like, when, I hate to always bring it back to Clare, but it actually is a comparable county in football terms. And, you know, they had their year years and years in Division 4, but they were just making progress every year in the Championship. They were getting those couple of qualifier wins. They weren't getting anywhere in the Munster Championship. They were getting those couple of qualifier wins, and they were losing like by a point to Kildare when they should have won the game. And, you know, there was a few of those sort of over the years. And, you know, it led into just this solid battle-tested team that eventually went up, you know, two promotions in a row and have solidified their place in Division 2 now, you know.
Dude, that's a great point. It's probably it's the purest thing that the Championship was always about, and that like you're hoping for one great day, like one great scalp in a qualifier, that maybe, and that what that the lift that could give you, and even if not, how it could set you up for your next year, like even look back at your last year. But I suppose that's in context, it probably isn't as negative as I probably made out to be.
No, every team can't win the All-Ireland. They have to have their own individual goals, so unless they're in a B Championship.
Before we move on, we've got to go back on some comments we got on our last week's underappreciated players. So, Niall Murphy isn't an underappreciated player, but just to clarify what it is, it's players who, like, not, he's probably one of Sligo's best players right now. He's also their captain, which makes it pretty hard for him to be underappreciated. But the underappreciated players are players who don't necessarily consume the limelight because of one other star that they have in their squad. So they kind of go under the radar, away from that, but still can perform at a really consistent level throughout that. Now, we got a huge reaction to this, so I'm not going to go through it all. I picked out three comments. I thought these were really well thought out and they're worth trashing out here. The first one is from Peter Collins from Clare. Mick would be delighted to hear.
Not that Peter Collins.
And he suggested Gordon Kelly, an absolute legend in Clare football, 35 years of age now and playing better than ever. One of the only players who kept David Clifford to a single score in a Munster Championship game last year, even though Kerry scored 32 points. That's a really well thought out
Thanks for the reminder about Kerry's 32 points, but yeah, that's absolutely a good point. They're a long, long time as well.
Yeah, and we actually made the point last week that a lot of the players who fall into this bracket are going to be cornerbacks, just naturally, that they kind of don't get the credit they deserve, lads. Moving on, David Hines suggested Darren Gallagher from Longford, who scored 222 in the league. He's their third top scorer in Division 3, and he's also from midfield.
Why are you laughing?
But because that comment got sent to us on a Friday. On Monday, it was confirmed that Darren Gallagher is not going to be available for the entire championship because he's gone to America. Longford are without him.
So suddenly very appreciated by the Longford fans who are devastated to be missing him.
But he is probably one of the best midfielders in the country.
Yeah.
The probably counterpoint to that is that how consistent has it been, as a whole. There was I don't know if you remember last year against Meath, that qualifier where Meath landed a big scalp, or Longford landed a big scalp. He was incredible, that they're just an absolute powerhouse in the middle of the park. But we're not going to see any more of him for the year anyway.
And I was laughing because I'm actually good friends with his brother, and I didn't know that this is coming up. Darren's been unbelievable. Like, he has been considered, like, even on the true underage. Back when, you remember, Longford were taking like scalps of the likes of Dublin and that.
Yeah.
Darren would have been really prominent on those teams as well. So he has been sort of, because his older brother was kind of in and out with the Longford senior team and like had would play in college and stuff. And it was always one of those of, you should see the brother. I think this lad's good. Thomas is great, but I think, wait, let's see the brother along.
So does he qualify into our list of underappreciated?
I think
players?
They're both underappreciated.
Finally, Kieran Irwin suggested Antrim's Ryan Murray, who scores 322 in a league in a system that's really hard for attackers to play and has been doing it since 2013 when he's made his debut. That's another well thought out comment, and a great point about the idea that players in systems that don't necessarily suit themselves to your style, like especially as a four, you're playing a two-man forward line, what are you supposed to do? But still being able to do it. Exactly.
Can I give you one hurling example that we didn't, because it was a football one, and it's just something that sprung to mind there. We were talking about a couple of players, and again, unfortunately, it is a Clare example, right? But Conor McGrath, who possibly not anymore because he's been very, very injury prone and really, really struggled to find his form in the last kind of 2 years. But up until that, like, the Clare team who won the All-Ireland in 2013 and like that era of about 5 or 6 years, McGrath would be consistently Clare's top two or three performers, but he never got the press that a Tony Kelly or a Podge Collins even, or Shane O'Donnell or any of those boys would get, because he was just kind of always there doing it. But like the fan, like for me, he'd be like my favorite hurler, but even I wouldn't look out for him as much as the others, you know. And like, you know, he's had a lot of injuries and Clare are really missing him now, but when he was there, he was so kind of, he was that exact person that I think sums up this entire conversation, you know?
It's the exact definition of what we're looking for, just in the wrong sport. But
In another sport, yeah.
Okay. Just one last one. Apologies. Before I go, I know we don't want to start to listen to the ball off again, but one person we inexplicably forgot to mention, I think, last week, and who we should mention, one, because he's definitely falls into this criteria, and also because he's a friend of the show, Sean Gannon from Carlo. A lot of people in Carlo will argue that he is Carlo's best player, yet he's never in the headlines. It's always Paul Broderick or Brendan Murphy, and the only time Sean gets any attention is when he's sending us in match reports, I think.
Yeah.
And he deserves a lot more.
And a good future in match reporting as well, yeah. once the retirement
He's probably
comes.
A victim of his consistency in that, you know, Brendan Murphy is away and then he comes back, so he veers up and down. Same, like, Broderick might go score and then he scored 7 points, whereas Gannon's just doing it consistent the whole time,
yeah.
So you wouldn't necessarily attract much attention doing that. There's some cracking suggestions we got in there, by the way. We're going to try and wrangle together something as the year goes on, and we might even give out a prize for some of these suggestions. Moving on, Club Month. This is what I really wanted to talk about, because it's where all the action is. And last
this is like Tom and Jerry kids. Can we put that in there right now, that sting?
last Friday, I went out to Swords and got to see the return of the prodigal son, which was Jeremy Connolly starting his first championship game in a year.
Right.
And I left convinced that he's back. It was actually really weird, right? Naturally, it was a really small crowd in probably one of the nicest...
So Vincent's and
Bridget's.
Oh, in Swords?
Yeah, in
Fingallions. What a weird venue for that match.
In Fingallions. I think it's better there because it's one of the nicest club grounds in the country, but it's also the most exposed. The wind is always horrendous anytime you go out there.
Wind has messed up club months up until
massively, yeah.
Anyway. It's been a windy month.
Yeah.
We'll come back to that. So Vincent's, who everybody knows the attacking power they have. They've got Varley and Mossy Quinn on the inside forward line, and that's well renowned. So I was watching Connolly warm up before the game, thinking, how is it going to fit in with him? And Bridges would be a bit more of a defensive team, going to get players behind the ball. And not even joking, lads. Like, I watched him kick 15 balls warming up, and he missed every single one. Like, he was pulling it way wide, dropping into the corner, into the goals. And I was kind of watching, slightly worried about what was to come. Like, has this guy played any football? Yeah,
yeah.
Like, has his form totally deserted him?
I think, though, that's a sign of someone that's going to put everything over once the game starts.
Literally, the very first ball he gets, he pings a 50-yard pass off the outside of his left boot into Mossy Quinn and puts it over the bar. It's like he played a centre-back. So he didn't play as a centre-forward. Vincent had Ger Brennan, who's been like a stalwart for about 15 years, playing at centre-back. And they needed somebody else to do that job, the job of kind of cleaning up ball there and spraying it inside to an all-out attack inside forward line who will put it over the ball from basically anywhere. Like, whatever the equivalent of a, we spoke about wristy hurlers in the show, is whatever the equivalent in football of a wristy hurler is,
it's an outside of the boot,
it's just, it's
passer,
effortless. Yeah. Like, he's totally effortless in his passing ability. One thing that I kind of had forgotten how good Jeremy Connolly is at until you see him moving on to ball is his fielding ability. And I only kind of, like, it's obviously he's good at it because he's played as a centre forward before, or as a full forward, sorry, but from opposition kickouts, he's such a threat because he gets so high off the ball and his anticipation is class. So even if it's a catch, you know, it's not a over his head, it's into his chest.
Yeah.
He gets there before everybody else because he can burst out and do that job. So I actually think it's this position that, regardless of whether or not he goes in and plays into county after this, it's a position that really, really suits him because of his skill set and because of the team. And I think it goes to show as well, like, Tony Diamonds, who's coaching Vince as well, is pretty known to be kind of shrewd tactically. It's a position that gets the most out of him, and also it really benefits the team. Like, I actually think it was a really positive thing to see. And
yeah, and was he good? Like, was it, like, you know, because I know what you're saying, the things he did at centre back was good, but sometimes there is, when you're going to a club game, you're seeing a county lad really on form, stand out a mile and they just look so much better than everyone else. So was that the case at him in a different position? And also, did he look sharp, fit, fast? His pace still there, even though he was in a position that didn't need it much.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing. So Paul Clark was up there watching it, standing on the same hill that I was, the Dublin selector. And I think the most important thing that he would have taken away from it is that Connolly was like, looked really slim. He looked really strong. His fitness, he came off a minute before the end, was still making these 60-yard ventures forward from centre-back. There's also the point, right? By playing him as a centre back, he knows what a centre forward hates because he's been marked by, like, Lee Keegan. He's well used to that. So he is able to put centre forwards instantly on the back foot by timing these 60-yard runs. When you know as a forward, you just don't want to move. You're after putting in a shift of 2-3 minutes. You want to get your break. And he can time his run to counter then. And then because he's doing that, he's getting free. One other thing that he did really well, even when he wasn't marking a man, he didn't if a centre forward dropped off, went back into the other half of the pitch, he covered the ground in front of the full-back line really, really well. Not sweeping, because he's playing as a centre-back who's just not marking anybody. His man has deserted him. But he covered that space really, really well. I think there's a future in the position for him. I generally do. I think that, like, whether or not that's... We don't know what's going to happen with Dublin. It's cause probably not worth, you know, trying to anticipate that. But even if it's just for Vincent this year, who look kind of rejuvenated and have a nice balance now in that team, I think it's something that really suits him.
The other thing as well is that for Vincent in particular and Dublin, that they're going to have a lot of teams dropping off anyway.
Yeah.
So you're playing as centre half back, but most of them are actually probably playing as a quarterback, because you'll have a centre forward drop back into his own half and he's going to be in a blanket defence, and you might not have actually too much defending or tight marking to do.
Yeah.
You feel like if what you're saying there, you know, you've got a kind of a 30-man panel, you've got, you know, what is 26 on match day, you kind of feel like there should be room for Dermot Connolly in there, you know, and even if he's playing that way or in a different position, that they at least have those options open. You'd bring him back into the panel at this stage, wouldn't you? More or less straight away.
Yeah, I would.
There's no reason not to.
Yeah, where was Ger Brennan in all of this for Vincent?
So it looks like Brennan's retired. He stepped away. So it's a gap that they need.
Said he needed help, I thought he was like the other centre back or something.
Vincent needed help within this idea. But Ger Brennan left a gap there. There's a gap. But because he was such a fundamental part of the way they played football for such a long time, they need somebody who could do a similar job. You know, it's like... It's not a kick pass from the centre-back line. It's a centre-back who kind of collects the ball midfield, carries it to the half-forward line, and then delivers it inside. That kind of player. So somebody who's like... We spoke about middle-tier players. What do we call them? Flyers. We spoke flyers on this show before. And that's what Connolly is now. He's kind of a flyer in and around that area. And it benefits him. Like, can you imagine a full-back or a back six this year of Jeremy Connolly, a centre-back, and Rory O'Carroll at full-back? It's a stronger spine, arguably, than what they had last year.
God.
I'm just putting it out there.
Roy O'Carroll's not coming back, I don't think. Is he?
I don't know. He played really well for Kilmacud.
Dublin can't keep getting better. It's not with old players. Like, they're not even... It's not even just the young players that are coming through. They're doing a Kerry and bringing an old...
Mossy Quinn was in form at the weekend as well.
He's kicked 1-8 at 38. But
that's what Kerry do. Kerry bring in like a kind of a guy who's been gone for a couple of years and put him at number 6. It's what they've always done. Now you're telling me that Dublin are taking that on as well. It's not fair. It's
Paul
not fair.
Galvin came back as a centre back as well.
Come here. Did you share a suppy or flask with Paul Clark on the hill?
I was
is there chatting about the future of Dublin football.
I was terrified to even look at him. I was thinking, like,
as he get called up.
Well, do you know what happened, right? I knew I was going to put him in any copy that I wrote after it, and I knew he'd probably end up hearing about it. So I was like, I don't want him to know what I look like for fear of what will happen next time we meet.
Okay.
Interesting times in Galway club football as well. Carfin were beaten by about 10 points by Clannan last weekend in their first league game back since
classic All Ireland hangover.
Yeah,
is that a championship?
No, that was first. They won the league. That was league. Won the Frank Fox Cup 7 years in a row, and I think they've only been beaten less than 7 times, maybe 6. But in that, their form is unbelievable. But it strengthens my... I always argue that the best game Carfin get a lot of the time when they go into an All Ireland is it within the Galway Championship. Last year, Montbellew brought them to a replay. I don't think anyone else came. Nobody else did come anywhere near them. I suppose that just sent that argument elsewhere.
So does that mean, are you trying to say that Galway football is so far and away the best county club game in the country?
Galway county football is a lot better than it's given reputation for. It's just as a problem that it's the best club team ever in it at the minute.
That's fair.
It's like a juggernaut coming through at the same time.
Yeah, it's like Cork were always the second best team in Ireland when Kerry won the All Ireland every year.
Yeah,
under Mika.
I'm just thinking of the Kilkenny B team, the three of the matches.
Yeah,
under
that's Cody. It. Yeah, that's a better example.
My own club at home had an interesting weekend as well. Actually, this is an interesting one, right? So I was scrolling through Facebook on Saturday to see how they get on. They're playing their opening league game against local rivals Moycullen, and Moycullen had a status up, right? And Moycullen said, "Senior results: Moycullen had a 1-point victory over Barna today." 13 points to 1-9. Shane Richardson brings off a great save for a penalty. Moy Cullen a boo. I thought, damn it, we're after losing.
Yeah.
And then I saw on Twitter from Barna their own results from the game. Final results in the senior league today. Barna 1-10, Moy Cullen 12 points. It's like, hang on, these are two different scores with two different winners. So I went to Facebook, and Barna had another status up there to say, "The referee is disputing the final score from the game today, but we think we have video footage to clarify it. Huge thanks for management to all the players for a fantastic result today, full of passion and commitment. Well done, lads." And then the
Did the ref mark a point to the wrong team?
It sounds like it.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
But then because the two of them are arguing it out on their individual club accounts on social media, all the players are weighing in as well. So there's a war in the comment section between each of them posting who was in the right and who was in the wrong.
Well, funny you should mention that, because that could never happen anywhere else in club month, could it?
No. Well, I assume, yeah.
Yes. Cavan Gaels against Rabbit United. First match of club month in Cavan a couple of weekends ago. The referee maintained at halftime that it was 7 points apiece. Others had Rabbit United winning. Then come the end of the match, the referee had it. Cavan Gaels scored at the last kick of the game, which got them, in the referee's eyes, a draw. Which in other people's eyes brought the game back to 2 points. A two-point game to Rama. So basically, the argument is that the referee marked 1 point to Rama United.
Which sounds like
Cavan Gaels when he should have marked
to Rama. Which sounds like if there's a two-point discrepancy, exactly, it sounds like what happened in the other games. Now, lads, you're not going to believe this. I haven't even said this. I didn't know about this story. You're not going to believe it.
What?
No, I'm only joking. Oh. but I know I don't have a specific club month example, but I have heard this so many times over the years. It's something that a club referee, and it is a game that it's quite high scoring,
of course, yeah.
And it's one man on his own, and he's just knocking off point, and it's easy to do it in the wrong column, but. Surely this day and age you should have some kind of safeguard or someone, a linesman keeping score or something. You know,
interesting that. This has gone on now for a couple of weeks in Cavan, and obviously Cavan Gaels or Rammer, I think, were sending video evidence to the county board to show the different scores or whatever. And the lads on the We Are Cavan podcast reporting this week that they were talking to some of the Cavan Gaels players who made a very good point, to be fair to them, which is they were asking the referee to score the whole way through the game.
So important.
They were told at half time it's a draw. They were told in the last couple of minutes that they're a point behind. So, it's not just simply a case of, they scored more than us, so they win.
That's such a big deal.
Yeah,
because I was asking you about a game you were playing in last week, and you were saying, "Jesus, it was really high scoring. We didn't know what score it was. We kept having to ask the referee." You forget that you're in a game in a high scoring game. You don't just automatically know what score it is. There isn't a massive scoreboard in the corner. You're asking the referee, and if you're playing a game a certain way based on what score it is, and if Cavan Gaels think that game's a draw, it's not a case you just award the win. I think you have to play the game again or something, you know. Yeah. But it. You know, psychologically, it totally matters what score it's perceived to be rather than what it is.
Did you win your own club game, Mark?
We did. We won at the weekend. We had two games. I was playing in the Junior B game in a massive force 9 Gael or whatever numbers are high in Gaels. We're playing with it in the first half. And all of a sudden, this random thing happened where the referee blew the halftime whistle. We have a scoreboard with the time and everything on it.
That's what we need,
halftime whistle, 25 minutes in. And there proceeded to be an argument at the sideline about whether the game should be 25 or half an hour. And someone, I think, put forward the idea that we play 35 minutes in the second half. And it was like, we're willing or shite, should we play with the wind? Why would we play 35 minutes to get the wind? And then I was right, everybody back out for another 5 minutes. So three halves.
Referee technology, I think, should be our cause this summer. Especially when we're talking about clubs, given what happened. In terms of club month in general, right, is there any kind of a... this is kind of the first year when it's been settled in. Are we kind of... Are we seeing the benefits of it yet? Or are there benefits? Is there no benefits and it's just this random month that they've thrown into the middle of the season?
I think it helps in certain examples. Certain counties do a lot better than others. The basic premise is that the year is probably too long. And if you want to get rid of April for clubs, you have to condense the year first to do it. But as it is right now, to go back to the Dublin example, it's probably nice that they have a couple of championship games now. They're going to be out again this week. But then you're left sitting idle. But at least you know in your own head what you're doing and you're playing league games. I think that's one of the biggest problems, by the way, is that whatever about championship games, you should play league games regardless of county players or not, like they do in Monaghan, and just have them score differently. At least don't have players sitting totally idle. Something during the summer, regardless of however your championship structure is. If you're going to play games in April and then play the rest of them in August, or start it all in August, whatever you're going to do, you should still be playing league throughout the summer. Don't have players in the nicest weather and the nicest pitches sitting idle.
Yeah, I can't. I can't get my head around playing championship in the middle of April. Sounds like madness to me.
Yeah.
Cavan, they do it well, to be fair, as well. You play league games without county players. There's a few weeks basically these couple of weeks in April that are assigned the county players.
So it's like, so there's designated league games. So even though it might not be a weighted system like they have in Monaghan, you know how many times you've got them throughout the year. And every club is the same.
For instance, from the start, the last weekend in March, I think we have nine weekends in a row. Then there's a weekend off, and then there's another four or five weekends in a row. Then you've got semi-finals and finals of their own. And then you're straight into championship.
Yeah.
So like there's actually, if you qualify for a semi-final and a final between the end of March and possibly October, you've got about 3 weekends off. So
I was in a club in a prominent county. I won't say who they are. I don't think it's fair to give away yesterday. Just talking to club people, asking them championship game this weekend. Pretty big game. It's a knockout second chance competition rather than a round robin. There will be a second chance, but you know they've got to play that game against the team that beat them last year. They're going, you know, it's in April. It feels a bit weird. It's like what Mark's saying, that everyone's like, Jesus, championship this weekend. It's kind of bizarre, you know. And then it's like, right, that's the last we'll see of the county players until they come back again in August or whenever it is, you know, to play again. And it's just like there's this big long gap for everybody that, you know, if the club is all you have and that's all you're doing, and that's the case, but for, you know, 17, 18 of the 20 people that will play on Sunday, you know, that's all they have. They're starting a competition in April and they're not playing it again until the autumn.
Yeah, which is probably...
Think about that. Like, they're playing one game in the start of a competition and then it just disappears. There's no... Yeah. That doesn't exist anymore. So regardless of what you're saying about league, and everybody does want games, you should be playing more league, I don't understand the point of knocking a load of teams out of a championship. Or, so early, you know, and then it's gone. But I don't know. I still think there's lots to learn. It is good that the players are at least with their clubs for a few weeks.
In football as well, it's been one of the positives that we haven't really paid attention to in terms of like Gaelic football and Dublin's dominance or whatever, the tactics, whatever it is, in terms of people saying that there's not as much interest in it or whatever. I don't think that there's less interest in Gaelic football. I think the interest may just be transferred over a little, that there's not as much interest in the intercounty game, but that the club game is more popular than ever. You can see from attendance figures, people watching games as well, you know, the reaction you see on TG Cahir or whatever, what the game's been on, that like there's a massive interest in that. And I know myself this year that like at the start of the year, it's like, geez, I can't wait for the Cavan Championship, the senior championship in Cavan, about nine teams can win it. And the intercounty game is really getting in the way of it.
It's also just not a vibrant competition at the moment. So you could take that in any sport. You had Kilkenny, it seems like it was one of the best teams we've ever seen, and we had some great finals, but were they great championships? No, because they felt inevitable. You had Michael Schumacher winning every year in Formula One. That was kind of the end of the heyday of that, even though people like Schumacher, you know? It's just, that's just the way it is. If it's a foregone conclusion, what's the point? Whereas you'll watch, you know, the competition that's close to home and close to
I do
heart.
Think also that the thing of just that, maybe it's the internet and... Again, more games being televised, that there is a sort of wider interest in that everyone can follow a lot of the different championships that are going on. And even on our site, you'll see it. Like, for instance, Jermaine Connolly playing for Vincent's or whatever it is that's happening randomly, that you just are kind of more tuned into all the stories that are going on around the country.
And I suppose it's all this is predicated on the idea that, you know, county managers are going to let their players away. And they always have that fear, especially Eoin Mucksavage is up in Cavan, supposedly.
Happened now?
These are interesting quotes.
More anti-Cavan agenda here. I'm actually turned the other way at this stage. It's so unfair, this bullying.
Wait until you hear
every
this
week.
And then you can go back to it. It's Cavan manager Mickey Graham speaking to the Irish News today. And I thought this was really interesting. So he talked about how nervous he was at the minute because, quote, the county players seem to be getting a lot of attention, special attention. They will be targeting games, especially key players. It just doesn't help the county. Any lads to pick up knocks at this stage are probably missing a week's training or more, and then you're only 5 weeks out now. Every session the lads are missing has a knock-on effect for further on down the line. I understand what's going on. It's just annoying that the lads are picking up so many knocks in a short space of time. What are you doing up there?
I don't know. This is the first I've heard of it. I mean, the lads were away at a stag for the first weekend of half the county team, so they didn't have any. Maybe the knocks, they picked up a few knocks over there.
Do county players get targeted though?
See they like it's a good question, and they do, right? I mean, you know from playing club football as well, you're targeted in terms of like there's a line there, obviously. But if you're playing against somebody who's so much levels above you,
you have to try and stop them.
Exactly. Yeah. No. You never ever want to cross the line in terms of injuring them. But I know for myself, for example, like you would always, that's something that would kind of. you'd be thinking about during the week about who you're going to mark and what you would do, and like you might be tugging at his jersey or trying to annoy him. You're not saying, like, you're not getting into nasty stuff, like you're not hitting him off the ball or saying, slagging him about family or any of that kind of stuff, but you are, you're reserving particular special attention.
You're not.
Yeah, who's the you?
But you are reserving special attention for him. Everybody does it.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen any.
I suppose there's no solution there either, is there? Like, you know, they still have to play for their club. So
yeah, and you just like you just hope that people would toe the line too. Like, don't get into that nasty stuff and overreact. And that
I've heard of a lot of players that I haven't played games, but I thought a lot of that could be down to them. Kind of, you're going, oh, Joe, I think I feel a niggle there. I might sit this one out. That it's as much the county player as the actual injury that they're keeping themselves wrapped up in cotton.
They've got a nice month off. Yeah, is that exactly the way they're looking at it?
Like? But maybe not. Maybe there are lads being targeted.
Right, that's enough of that that negative talk. We're going to move on and kind of tease the summer and what's to come by looking at some TV commentary moments.
It's back once again by a Noel McGrath. Back once again it comes here to the number two. Back once again to Conor Loftus. Once again through one market to another. But back once again. Back once again there to Brian Stack. One back once again here. Back once again to Philly McMahon this time. There's a chance for Mayo now just to build it from the back once again. Back once again towards back once again. Back once again. Back once again.
TV commentary, lads. This segment was proposed that we're all going to pick our two, what would you say, favourite, but not the certainly the best, but just two that kind of mean something special to...
Yeah, not that they're not necessarily the best, but that like they're just the thing that come to mind as a favourite commentary moment. There is not, they're just like, and a little, just for various different reasons, where you were when you were watching them, what you remember about them, and just like a lovely little moment from a TV commentator. And it's funny because we talk, the reason I particularly wanted to do this, right, because it's something that came up a few weeks ago when we were talking about it, where there's no games on at the moment, we're not hearing the Jerk Hannings and Marty Morrisseys of the world, unless you're watching Marty's really weird television show, which I saw about 5 minutes of and never want to see again. But like, it's not even that it's bad. It's just so weird. What is going on? Why is Marty Morrissey and Bernard O'Shea going around America getting like fashion advice
America
and stuff like
how
that?
How did they end up in America?
I think they were in America. I'm not sure. I think
were they in America or dressed up as Americans?
It could be either or.
Like, the only part I saw of this was Bernard Brogan telling them how he's in a WhatsApp group James Brogan and Michael Darren McCauley to arrange haircuts.
That's together. Right, yeah.
The last thing I want to do is make an event out of going to get a haircut. I want to be in and out there as quick as possible.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But anyway, no, I agree with you, to be honest. The last thing I want to do when I'm having a haircut is talk to anyone either.
Yeah.
But look, as I said, that's the only Marty we're getting at the moment and so on. There's not a lot of televised GEA. And when we talk about commentary, which is something that we like to do, and there are some amazing moments, invariably, and maybe it's just because it lends it to it so much with the audio thing, it is radio commentary that kind of comes up. There isn't, so Jerk Hanning has been around since, like, you know, the 1940s, commentating on All-Ireland finals. He's done about 600,000 of them at this stage. But has he got that many moments where you would say, other than what we just heard there a minute ago, when I'm saying back once again a lot to the Renegade Master.
Once again. That was about 4 years in the making, by the way, at least. I noticed him saying back once again all the time. And then I was saying to people, like, yeah, good lad. I was like, no, honestly, it does. And then it took us an entire championship of last year of just making a messaging channel for all of us to go, like, you know, 15 minutes into this game, he says
and
it again.
Here's the thing. You listen to them there. There's about, like, he says it about 16 times. That only took us about 3 matches.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and I think that was only about 3 matches. Worth. Anyway, look, I'm back to the point again for the third time. There aren't that many kind of like standout moments because the camera does the work for you a little bit with TV commentary a lot of the time, you know, but there have been a few. So when we just thought about it for a few minutes, I thought of two or three. You guys thought of two or three. There are lovely. I'd like to hear what other people think as well. And maybe we could play a few next week when people definitely let us know. But there are definitely some moments. I have one from the, would you believe, the 1974 All-Ireland football final.
Okay.
A few years before I was born now, Morris, I have to be honest. But when I was young, I had a tape. never a big Dublin fan, as you know, but I had a tape called Decade of the Dubs about the great 1970s team. And in their first All-Ireland win, where they kind of came out of nowhere to win it, the Jacks are back, Heffo's Army year, they beat Galway in the All-Ireland final. But it looked bad because Liam Salmon had a penalty for Galway. And he'd never missed one. It was a foregone conclusion to happen. But then Paddy Cullen stepped up, and Micheál O'Hare, the greatest commentator of all time, was there to tell us all about it.
There is a penalty now for Galway, and Paddy Cullen, heaven help him, in there in the goal, and Liam Salmon, who has never missed a penalty, going to take it. Well, there's the goalkeeper. The man with number 14 on his back is going to come up there on the left of your picture any moment.
So that's like, it doesn't sound that spectacular, but it's amazing how much of an event he made out of a penalty there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
it was
a story,
like,
yeah.
There's the goalkeeper, heaven help him, you know,
yeah.
He's never missed a penalty. It sets it up for this moment that when Cullen saves it, it was a brilliant save, by the way, as well. It was a high penalty, just kind of hit the bottom of his hand in a full stretch dive and hit it out. It just set it up that this is the seminal moment that's going to send Dublin on to win the All-Ireland. And that's all, for me, set up by the commentary. And as well, just that kind of moment where he says, He saved it. Oh, Paddy Cullen. Which, when I was a kid, I was convinced he had said old Paddy Cullen, which used to really annoy my dad, because I was the kind of kid to go around and kind of, like, you know, do commentaries around the house as I'm walking around. I really was with that. And he goes, he says, oh, Paddy Cullen. Sure, he was only a young fella back then. Why would he say old Paddy Cullen? So anyway, that's my first one. But I think we have more from Micheál O'Hare later on.
In itself, it's the best thing about good commentary, whether it be TV or radio. It's the kind of the storytelling aspect. Like, he charted a narrative there the whole way through, that you, like, even if you hadn't seen that clip, you know exactly what happened, and it kind of came to this dramatic conclusion, but he charted it perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's always been one of my favorites. It's always been one of my favorites, but me and Mark clashed over another one, so we'll hear that in a minute. But just the other one then that I was looking at, right, is far more modern. It's from 2005, the Tyrone Dublin match. People will remember the goal straight away, but I've always really, really loved the commentary about this. It's from Darren Maloney for Owen Mulligan's goal against Dublin.
Stephen O'Neill has it back for Tyrone, seeking out Owen Mulligan. Mulligan out in front, Christie out of the game. Mulligan, they've got to work a score from this. Owen Mulligan, options to his left, still Mulligan. Mulligan, what a goal! That is one of the great goals we've seen at Croke Park. Magic Mulligan.
Yeah, that's one of the best. Yeah.
That's my favourite. So it's a clash over.
Okay, sorry.
You took both my pieces, not
true. I'll give you back one. I'll give you back one. Look, I think a lot of it speaks for itself. I will say two things about it, though. One, I think Darren Maloney is the best GAA commentator in the country right now, TV anyway. On RT, I should say, actually, just to kind of even to narrow it down further. But he is obviously a football presenter and has so many, you know, irons in the fire that he can never be kind of locked down to. But I think he's a brilliant, especially Gaelic football commentator. Really, really like when he does games. And just the second thing about that is, like, it sums up how good the goal was as well, because up until the very end, the only reason he's kept saying Mulligan was because he's just treating it like a normal attack and he's just saying who has the ball. But it's continuously Mulligan. And it's like he's noticed he's doing that. So when he gets excited, he kind of uses it in a, like in the Jimmy McGee different class way of just kind of repeating it. And an ability of commentators have to kind of realize not only that it's a special moment, but how I've built up to this in my words and to continue on that way. I think it's just something that is either instinct or not. I don't know if you could ever train for it, but he has it brilliant. And then even the magic Mulligan bit at the end that kind of people forget. I just think that's perfection
also,
for a perfect goal.
Yeah, also the sort of need support. Who's he going to give it to? That sort of like that he's again telling the story. Like he's almost tactically analysing it as it's going on.
Mulligan keeps defying
every piece of logic.
Yeah, because Mulligan wasn't supposed to do what he did.
It's like Maloney's introducing logic to it at each time. It's like, you should pass it here, do this. And Mulligan's defying him each time.
You have a big act to follow, Mark.
I do. I don't think either of them can live up to it. But they're different.
Oh, good. One of them is.
They're good in a different way. Yes. The first one is you had 1974. I've gone with 1975. And Mickey Ned O'Sullivan. This is one where he went on an incredible solo run. And it was brought to an abrupt end. That is all I could say. By some of the Dublin lads. And Micheál O'Hare had a brilliant understated way of telling us about it.
In front of him, he's got past Alan Larkin. Paddy Robbie Riley's after him. Georgie Wilson's after him. Everybody's after him. He's well and truly looked after now. He's gone and...
So in case you haven't seen this thing before, Mickey O'Sullivan is absolutely poleaxed. And it's like
by Sean Daugherty, yeah, Dublin
Fulham. It's one of those, yeah, again, these day, this day and age, it would be, in the words of Jerry Canning, disgraceful. Disgraceful. But just goes, oh, he's well and truly looked after now.
It's and when he's saying they're all after him as well, it's his, like, again, it's like what I'm going back earlier about, like, using the words you've just used to react to an incident is an amazing talent, like, to be, yeah, able to pull that up. But, you know, his after him in the first place that he was using was kind of a euphemism for trying their best to foul him. Like, yeah, they, like,
target him.
Yeah, like, he was, it's one of the most amazing solo runs of all time because he's passing through, and not only are Dublin lads trying to tackle him, three of them overtly tried to foul him and miss him because he's gone too fast. There's Pat O'Neill even tried to throw, like, a kick I haven't seen since I was in primary school, like, a kind of trip his foot and tap his ankles and misses him completely. And then he just walks into a clothesline. But talk about perfectly, yeah, summing it up.
It was perfect.
You've got a second choice.
My second choice is a more modern one, and it's not really commentary, I suppose. It's after Donegal won their Ireland. Now, I was a big fan of Donegal that year because I thought they got a very harsh treatment. But they were obviously, you know, the year before, blanket defence and awful to watch. But I thought that year they were a brilliant counter-attacking team that were fantastic to watch. A lot of counties weren't kind of geared up to defend against them or whatever. And I was delighted to see Donegal win it. And Martin Carney, who has featured heavily in a lot of these clips for being unbelievably biased towards Mayo, showed great grace and was one of the first people to sort of... this has been overdone, I think, at this stage by now, in the years that have come since. But in terms of, you know, just summing up what it'd be like to be from Donegal and to win that at Ireland.
Donegal, more misery, however, for Mayo.
Well, Jerry, it must be said that after the Dublin defeat last year, Donegal were regarded as pariahs. They were regarded as the group who had cannibalised the code. They were looked at as the apostles of anti-football. But this group of guys have shown quality. They've forced a rethink and a reassessment on how they should be accepted. They've been exceptional athletes and they've stitched together six displays. Of seven displays of power, teamwork, with athleticism, skill, belief, and courage, character have been the trademarks of their play. They're worthy winners today. They're deserving champions. And from the tip of Mallon to the southerly point of the Drouse River, to the hills, the valleys, the towns along the majestic coastline, through the wild wilderness of the Blue Stacks, this will be celebrated by no other. And fair play to them.
So yeah, we've seen that a lot now, you know, in recent years, that you name every place name in the county when you're doing a summary, and take out the thesaurus and the dictionary and try and name all the different bits and bobs that make up a team.
Yeah.
But that was the first of them. And it was poetic, it was fitting, and I think it was...
from the heart, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it really felt like it was from the heart that this was a kind of a emotional reaction to not just the team winning, but the way they'd been treated.
And particularly when they beat Mayo, it was another thing that was kind of like, for Martin, obviously, was it was a very personal match for him.
Yeah, both sides.
It's funny you say that, right? Because moving on to my moments, so, like, sometimes the commentary, the moment itself demands great commentary. Like, it needs to, it's so significant that it needs the commentary to reflect that. And I think my first example here is a classic example of that. So it's like, just a small bit of context, it's somebody who's been kind of constantly doubted kind of throughout his career. And for me, this was the moment where he put that all to bed finally. Not that he needed to, but anyone who could try and criticism after that would look like a total screamer, really. And this is when it kind of, and it was just beautifully summarised at the time.
Well done to Brendan Gleeson, or Darren Gleeson rather, to keep that one out. And it comes out to Johnny Cohen. Cohen, Galway looking for another one. It's Canning once again firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot. It's gone over the bar. Galway are in front.
And the time is up. What a score by Joe Kennedy.
Like, for me, anyway, that was the fact that he even pulled out it was a miracle score, because when you look at it, it was ridiculous where he hit the ball from, the pressure he was under at the time to put it over the bar then. And I think he summarised it perfectly.
Definitely. And it's also the thing, like Maloney before him with Mulligan, of like, you can hear the commentator's genuine awe at what just happened.
Yeah, and that's always great. And I like that you included a little bit of Deignan coming in there as well with their kind of like sometimes emotional reaction to what's just been said as well, or what they've seen. It's like I actually took that out with, I think it was Martin Carney actually with the Mulligan goal, but he was the same, like, you know, that kind of, I can't believe what I've just seen. And I think sometimes having them as a double act kind of works as well there, you know.
Speaking of summaries, I think the next one does the exact same thing. So this is Kerry, who had been who'd been doubted right up until that 2009 quarterfinal against Dublin, and they'd been coming all the way through. And then at the very start, there was question marks of who they were going to start with, and Colm Cooper started, and 30 seconds later, he did this.
Free to Kerry. They have spluttered through the summer. Could easily have been beaten and should have been beaten by Sligo. Struggled for long periods against Antrim, but this man has been the key, Paul Galvin. Dar O'Shea has been prominent as well. That goes away from O'Sullivan, who's been marked by Dennis Bastic. Goal chance here for Kerry. It's the Gooch, and it's a goal.
Everything about that for me, right? From the names that he named up there, like, think about that. That ball went from Paul Galvin to Dar O'Shea to Mike McCarthy to Colm Cooper to a goal. That was the four sequence that came in there. The fact that he teed it up perfectly. He talked about the fact they should have been beaten by Sligo, and they were about to beat the favourites for the All-Ireland that year in Dublin. And the man who finally delivered it, which was Colm Cooper, who'd been kind of doubted throughout the year. And the sequence of it's the Gooch and it's a goal.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just done.
That's
it's written there.
I was going to say, yeah, that's
like,
perfect.
There were what, four or five passes in that? It never was commentated as a pass. It was just like, Paul Galvin's been very prominent, as has Dar O'Shea. It's like, you just know he's on the ball.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I imagine that's pretty hard to do, actually.
That tees us up for a pretty exciting summer. But somebody else who's going to be pretty excited for summer is Niall Murphy, who we can chat to next.
The impression of the game you get all with what you put into is like a walk of life. If you're good enough, go out and get it, no more about it. Your mother sends you down to the shop for a pound's worth of goods and she gives you 50 pence. You can't get the pound's worth of goods, can you?
All right, I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Sligo's Niall Murphy. Niall, how's the form?
Good now, Morris. Now, thanks for having me on.
I just suppose you've had a couple of weeks to think about it now. Looking back on the old league, how would you consider it in hindsight?
In terms of our own league, probably didn't go too well or didn't go to plan this year. Unfortunately, we got relegated, but I suppose in saying that, we probably did improve as the games went on. We unfortunately didn't win a game, and rightly so, got relegated this year. But huge learning curve in terms of ourselves. We had a lot of new lads, and I was only looking recently there at our league games this year compared to our championship teams last year, and we had a huge overhaul in terms of changing the numbers. So it's a bit of a rebuilding stage now at the moment for Sligo, a lot of young lads. So a couple of positives, I suppose, were them lads getting a bit of game time, a bit of experience under the belt. Hope they'll set them up nicely now for the championship and then for next year.
I suppose even looking ahead to the championship, like, I just looking back at it last year, you obviously had a great start to last year's championship and then played Galway, but then gave Armagh like a real cracker. Like, looking at it now, is the championship obviously kind of like, how do you consider the championship now? You're after coming through what it was a difficult league spell, and you're looking at what could be a short space of games. What would your metric for success be?
Yeah, I suppose it's uncharted territory for myself. Anyway, I haven't been relegated. I haven't been in this position before going into the championship. So it is uncharted in that sense. But we did play all the last year, and they gave us a bit of a hiding. So, if we were able to go up and play them, we're playing them at home this year, and hopefully close that gap a bit more and see a bit of progress on the scoreboard. I suppose we would be happy with that. I mean, I don't know if the 10 or 15 minutes to go, if you're thereabouts, what would happen. But definitely we'd be looking to get a couple of wins on the board. If I go down 3 years, if they're winning two or three championship games, it's probably deemed a success. But that's definitely where we're coming from.
Looking at the league, I mean, you obviously first came up on our radar, anyway, was when you proposed the format for maybe reverting back to the old type, which was the A and B. And like, when you sat down at the start of the year, was a league a priority, or do you think that could have been used more for development?
I think in terms of ourselves, it was definitely used for development.
Okay.
For myself now, I've probably been there a long time, and I was probably looking at it, or if this was the goal, I was probably looking at it in terms of trying to get out of the division, but I suppose we had to take a step back and look. We had a lot of retirement last year, and a lot of lads stepping away, and we had a load of young lads coming up through the ranks. So it, look, it was looking back. It was a development, and I suppose that was the goal set was originally just to try and stay in the division. And obviously, you'd love to be get promoted. And we've been in Division 3 for 7 or 8 years now already. But unfortunately, we did get relegated. But you know, I suppose for Sligo ourselves, every year we'll be putting a huge emphasis on the league. We'll be back training like November time. You know, we'll be one of the first counties back, trying to get the fitness up, the team work in, and really pushing for that league promotion. But unfortunately, it hasn't happened now the last couple of years.
And all that work, I suppose, is in lieu of the fact that, like, maybe from your own perspective, you've got huge turnover of players, which is obviously can sometimes be a problem. Like, does it kind of feel like you're treading water a lot of the time when that's the case?
Yeah, it can do. It is frustrating. Like, it is frustrating when you're losing a lot of lads and a lot of good lads. And it's hard to know the actual reasons why lads don't commit, but... I'm sure when you're not going well, obviously, is one. But for the amount of training to games is definitely another. Like you're training from November to July, and at minimum, you're only guaranteed 9 games, and you're probably training over 100 or 150 times if you're training 4 or 5 times a week, as most counties are. So in terms of games to training, I think it's a huge factor. Obviously, the commitment there is massive, and the games then are quite low. So yeah, I don't look. It is a frustration. Like, hopefully now with the team we have a really young squad, and if they can stay there and stay involved, and you know, develop themselves, players as athletes as well. Hopefully you can see a bit of progression then down through the years.
And we'll talk about maybe what the GAA can do in a minute. But just as a county, like, is there anything you can do to try and address maybe that turnover issue? I don't know how you can't force people to stay committed. But is there any way, maybe initiatives or things that you could try and do to keep a bit more consistency in the squad?
Yeah. Win a few games anyway is number one priority. But in Sligo here, we'd have a lot of competition. So in terms of the rugby's getting quite popular at the minute. The soccer obviously is huge now. We've probably, for the first time in a couple of years, we've lads picking hurling even over the football, which isn't great for the footballers. But in terms of incentives, it's all about getting lads involved at a young age and keeping them involved and keeping them happy. Like, Rovers here now are developing some underage teams and younger teams, and you see them around the town in their gear and set up, and a lot of social media activity around them. So I think there is incentives like that to get young lads involved. So the young lads love a bit of attention and that. So many small things like that, those keep lads involved. And obviously, winning is the main one. We have a good school system here in Fairness, Sligo, with an attractive in Summerhill, where we get lads at a young age. And in Fairness, we've been competing at a high level and then through colleges. So that's key going forward as well. I suppose getting the lads from around the county to those schools as well is another big thing. And to keep competing at that school level and an underage level is massive, obviously.
Your league proposal, we might as well try and address that now. So, like, what would you have seen the added benefits to maybe splitting it the way that you proposed as opposed to the current format?
Yeah, well, like playing, I suppose playing, if you're playing teams on a regular basis who are, mm-hmm. who's on paper maybe better than you, it's obviously going to give you that chance to sort of make yourself better and make your team better, and I suppose you learn a huge amount. Like, I look back, I'm actually looking recently enough at the structures a couple of years ago or back in the early noughties, and Sligo were going up and down divisions, but they were regularly playing in Division 1A and Division 1A or B. It didn't matter at the time, but they were regularly playing some of the big teams and giving them big teams games as well. I also remember being in Message Park and there'd be huge crowds down. So like, the more access you have to those bigger games, the more you improve. And I know down through the years, like when we played a couple of years when we played Mayo in a Connacht final, and it was one of my first years playing, and I could learn a huge amount from that game. And I know we got well bet in the end, but if we could play them again a couple of weeks later, I believe that we wouldn't have had that large of trimming. So I think the GAA seems to be trying to segregate it more and more, and if they went the other way for a while and maybe trying that out, I think it'd be great. If we had the option of playing teams that were ahead of us at a more regular basis, I think we definitely improve as players and as a team. I know in terms of your own, you had a structure there as well. Was it the league format in the three leagues?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was quite interesting. I know you branched out then, you sort of said that maybe there'd be a lot of dead rubber games because only two have gone up or two have gone down. But if you were to bring another team into that, it's possible of three or four going up and playing like a semi-final, the same as a relegation, if you had three or four teams and that involved in that sort of process, you know, you suddenly have games there towards the end of the season that are meaning a bit more.
You're preaching to the converted here. That was my idea.
So. Yeah. Sorry, I might have missed that. No, but like, look, at the end of the day, if you're playing higher teams, you're going to see the benefits then. I know there's probably a lot of counties out there hoping for a B championship, but I'm struggling to agree with the idea as of yet. I suppose down the years, like, would have been competing at a fairly high level. Like, mm-hmm. I've been involved, you know, been involved in cycling teams that have beaten Galway and have beaten Roscommon, and have been involved in a team or two that has ran Mayo Thoughts as well in 2012 Connacht final. So Sligo have the experience there of competing at that fairly high level, and it's maybe why that you probably don't often hear Sligo lads coming out and preaching for a B championship.
Yeah, and that probably the idea of a B championship would probably be another deterrent to keeping players involved, like maybe if you feel like you're competing in an inferior competition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like I seen a tweet at some stage, it was today or it might have been yesterday, about when the Joe McDonagh Cup, and they were giving out that there had been no date set in the fixtures. The fixtures have been set for 6 or 7 months, but they've had no date or time left, you know, which is a bit mad. It's a bit mental. Like, but I suppose that's the respect probably given towards those lesser competitions, and it's certainly not something I wouldn't want to be involved in anyway.
Yeah, and on that team, right? So like. In an ideal scenario, this would be properly covered, it would be properly promoted, the competition would be well organised. Now, there's no precedent because that didn't happen with the Tommy Murphy Cup, and that's why that failed, and it's not happening with the Joe McDonagh Cup. Like, the coverage, that was avoided last year. We've spoken about that a lot in this show. But in an ideal scenario, if all those boxes were ticked, would you see a benefit in a B championship then?
I suppose it's initially like, maybe you have that chance in the A format, first of all, like a Champions League format where you can maybe fall off. But I do think everyone should be given that initial chance in the A division. And I suppose at the end of the day, lads want games. If it's a four-tier or if it's a four-team leagues in a Champions League format, and it came third or fourth and you were pushed back out to the B championship, I think lads might be more happier, might be able to take that in a little bit better. And at the end of the day, it's more games again. But I can't see myself being hugely opposed to going straight into a B championship. I don't think the players would have much hope for it. And even if the boxes were ticked, I'm not sure how it would work really going forward.
You might be surprised to hear this, but we don't often get messages from active intercounty players. Like the idea that you were maybe thinking about formats, or even you just mentioned retention in your county, like these are big responsibilities, I suppose, that a lot of players would be more focused on their own game. But like, when did that start becoming a concern for you, or for how long have you started to, you know, burden that issue?
Every year you see something new coming out from the GAA, Super 8s or I suppose you get a little bit maybe pissed off with the changes that are kind of even with the new rule changes this year, and sort of just like a bit mad at times, all these new changes, and maybe it's a selfish point of view that we're always stuck in Division 3 and Division 4 and playing teams that are of a similar nature to ourselves or lesser extent. So it's probably because of that, and it's probably only extend over the last year or two. I suppose you're putting a huge amount of effort and working into being involved in the county team, as I said, and the others, you're up in 120 to 150 sessions a year, and you're playing 9 games out of it. So I think, you know, it'd be great if a short career span from my own perspective. I'd love to be playing teams of a higher grade every week, so to play more games. So what you put into it is you'd like to get a lot more out of it.
And on that team, I suppose, looking ahead to the summer, like we won't do London a disservice, but if it is Galway, you end up playing in a semi-final, that's probably the ideal gauge that you're talking about there, that you can see, can you have like a better crack off them than maybe you did last year?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And it'll be a test to see how far we've come from last year. I know, like, we have new management, a lot of new players, so it's hard to judge off 2 years, but I know again it will be a great test, and hopefully we can put it up to them and we can give them a good game, and with 10-15 minutes there, we might be there thereabouts. But yeah, they're the games you want to be playing. Like if it was a B Championship coming in, again, you're playing a game in Markfitch Park against a Division of 3 or 4 side. You know, you're not getting the crowd out, and the media probably won't have too much interest in it. And I suppose it's hard to really just pump yourself up, I'd feel, anyway, for a massive game playing probably a week inside. And it's a huge opportunity for Sligo. Like, it's great to have the chance to play these teams. I know a couple of years ago we played Mayo and they beat us very well, but 2 years later again we played them when we were there thereabouts with a couple of minutes to go. Again, two very similar teams. So once you can see a bit of progression, you do have a bit of hope.
Just before you go, we might as well have you resolve all the pressing issues for the GAA. We spoke earlier about in the show about the April for clubs and whether or not that's working. How have you found that as a player?
Well, we've actually had no championship anyway. Okay. We've had no championship. We have, like, I suppose it's like, we're thinking is that we'll probably be knocked out fairly early, so they don't have that issue of congestion towards the end of the year. But we usually have league games. We actually haven't had any last weekend or the weekend before that, which has been a nightmare. We've had under 21 championship on, so we've been pushed back. We've a game this weekend, we've a game next weekend then as well. But I don't think it works really. I think going forward the GAA has to like align all counties, you know, that they're following the one script. So I think in terms of even championship structures, like you see some counties and they've, or even their league format, you know, they might have 19 or 20 league games, which is mad. Like we've 9 here. Even some championships I know, and some counties have knockouts. Some championships have group games. So I think all them structures, I think, need to be aligned going forward to secure like a steady proposal or a steady flow in terms of games. You know, when can club games be played, when county games be played. So I think those structures need to be lying going forward anyway for this congestion to be sorted out or to be fixed.
And it's at the probably the priority amongst all of that is trying to control the games to training ratio, like have a properly organised calendar, so then at least you'd know, whether that to be as a club or a county player, when games are coming, that they are coming regularly.
Exactly. Like it's mad. Like you're only guaranteed 9 games a year. That's in terms of your league games, and then if you have 2 championship games, so if you're lucky to obviously win a couple more, you have a few more on top of that. But the games ratio is nuts. Like county players, I suppose, they only want to play games. And even talked to my old lads who were involved in that mad couple of games a couple of years ago. They loved that. They loved playing week in, week out. And if you had that opportunity of championship games week in, week out, it would be great. But I think those structures, I think, need to be lined across all the counties. And so I don't know if it's, you have certain weeks and months dedicated to club and then to county, if that's how it is to go forward, even in terms of the rugby proposals that they do. The club lads seem to play with the clubs for a while, and then they have a block for the internationals. Yeah. It seems to work quite well. Something like that going forward might be something to flirt with.
No, that's great. Thanks a million for taking the call.
No worries, guys. Thanks very much.
But now in the UCV.
The Sunday evening sport results. And we begin as usual with a look at today's GAA results.
But now in the UCV.
McKenna Cup semi-final. Antrim 2-10, down 1-9.
But now in the UCV.
And first that shock defeat of newly crowned Ulster champions Down in the McKenna Cup semi-final at Casement Park.
But now in the UCV.
They were well beaten by Antrim after taking the gamble of resting 3 of their key players.
But now in the UCV.
Down couldn't compete with Antrim's strong midfield.
But now in the UCV.
The goals that clinched victory came in the second half from Mick Cunningham and Kevin Goff. Antrim meet Armagh in the final.
But now in the UCV.
But now in the UCV.
But now in the UCV.
Right, we're nearly out of time, but in the meantime, Mark, we have a big favour to ask of everyone.
Yes, please do subscribe to the podcast and rate it. If you aren't subscribed already, subscribe. You can get us on all good podcast platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, if they want to call it that, and all the rest. But also, if you are already subscribed, please leave a rating on those podcast platforms, particularly on Apple Podcasts, if you're listening to it. And that's it. If it could be a good rating, bad rating, preferably a good one, yeah, but just any sort of rating.
Sure, look, listen to us in the car. Speed us up to 1.5, get it over and done with nice and quick, but you'll still get all the fun and enjoyment.
You know? Get the gist
of it. Slow it down for the commentary clips, I suppose.
Yeah, and the interview.
And when I'm talking.
I find it very hard to listen to people in normal speed now.
Yeah, I can't do
I'm very used to their voices being in 1.5. That sounds normal to me. So it sounds like they're speaking super slow when they're back to normal.
I don't listen to anything over normal because...
It's a new world, Morris.
I read before that you don't actually, you think you do, but subconsciously you don't actually absorb what you're listening to. If I asked you to recall certain moments from podcasts now, you'd think that you'd know them, but you actually wouldn't know them because your brain wasn't used to it being at such a high speed.
No.
I am used to it. I listen to more podcasts than I listen to real life human beings.
Listen to this podcast on normal speeds and we'll be back with you next week. Good luck.